Welcome to Everything Co-op, bringing you information on how cooperatives can help improve your quality of life. This show is being sponsored by the National Co-op Bank, NCB. The NCB is dedicated to strengthening communities nationwide for the delivery of banking and financial services for the nation's cooperatives, their members, and other socially responsible organizations. For more information on the power of community ownership, visit ncb.coop. That's ncb.coop. Now stay tuned for your host, Vernon Oakes.
Good morning, everybody. Welcome to Everything Co-op. This is Vernon Oakes, and this morning we have the pleasure of speaking to Dr. Stacy Sutton, who works at the University of Illinois, Chicago, and she has a couple other positions that we'll talk about today. Good morning, Stacy.
Good morning. Good morning.
Or should I call you Dr. Sutton? Which you prefer?
Stacy's fine.
Stacy's fine. Okay. So where are you this morning?
I am in Chicago. Yeah.
Is it still snowing in Chicago?
No. No, it's actually lovely. It's been a wonderful spring, early spring, so a little sun, some clouds, but today is a mild day.
And where are you originally from?
I'm originally from New York, and I still see that as home. I've been in Chicago 8 years, but I guess once a New Yorker, always a New Yorker. So that's where I spent most of my life.
Which borough?
Brooklyn.
Brooklyn. Okay. I used to visit New York a lot. My mother's family's from New York, and I was born there.
Oh.
Yeah, but reared in West Virginia, where my father is from. Used to love to visit New York in high school and college.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't party too much, but anyway.
No, I'm sure not. No, not the place for it.
So you are a part of something called Chicago Community Wealth Building Ecosystem. What is that? It's a long name.
It is a long name. We try to kind of encapsulate all of the things kind of in one name. And it comes out of what's called the Chicago Community Wealth Building Initiative, which was the city's investment in community wealth building. And we adopted the name in that regard because of the structure of that initiative. So in 2021, the mayor at that time, the former mayor Lightfoot, made a commitment to community wealth building by allocating $15 million from the American Recovery Act, the ARPA funds, to what we define as community wealth building. And it was a process in terms of a number of actors at the table, from communities, people doing cooperative work, to define community wealth building. So the term, some people use community wealth building, some people use other terminology. Solidarity economy, I think, is a little different, but we defined community wealth building as initiatives that are locally owned, democratically controlled, and there's shared benefit, right? So, locally owned, democratically governed, and there is a collective benefit for community, and focused on four things: worker cooperatives, limited equity housing cooperatives, commercial investment vehicles, or community investment vehicles, which are kind of investments in commercial properties for community. And which one did I forget? Oh, community land trusts.
So where does the wealth building come out of that? I got democratically controlled, shared ownership. Where does I assume wealth building means money.
Yeah, I mean, wealth is actually, we can define that broadly, but it's really, for this project, it's really important to think about it in terms of community wealth. We often go right to wealth building, and then people from there assume we're talking about just maximizing profits or maximizing wealth for individual investors. And that isn't community wealth building. Community wealth building, and the reason you have to hold all three things, local, democratic, and shared, because the wealth is to be shared. the wealth. It's not an individual developer, whether they're Black, Latinx, green or orange, not an individual developer coming in and doing a project that might seem like a good project for the neighborhood, but if the community is not actually financially benefiting from that, then we don't see that as community wealth building. So while we understand that structure for worker-owned cooperatives in terms of the workers' control and benefit from their labor, you can take that same logic and apply it to housing and get limited equity housing cooperatives. You can apply it to the land, right? The land in Chicago, there are a plethora of vacant parcels. And so how are we going to activate those parcels in a way that, and I don't, when I say we, I don't mean me. I mean, how are community residents able to access the parcels in their neighborhood and make them into things that benefit that neighborhood? And so the wealth in that regard, there's both financial wealth, surely, in terms of some of the businesses that get created and collectively owned by the workers. But it's also community land trusts. I mean, that tool is used to maintain affordability so people can't afford to stay in their neighborhood, right? That's also a form of community wealth. Mm-hmm. And community residents have control over how those assets are governed and developed.
So the government, Chicago, the city, through federal funds, put in $15 million to create this community wealth building ecosystem.
Yes, what they created was the initiative. The $15 million was broken into different buckets. The first bucket of maybe $6 million went to what we call technical assistance providers. And the logic there was, well, in order to sustain this work, to deepen and sustain the work in Chicago, it's important to invest in all of the entities that are supporting those four types of community wealth building. We call them the four pillars: worker cooperatives, limited equity housing cooperatives, community land trusts, and community investment vehicles, right? Those are great models, but if you don't have the technical support, everything from the lawyers to the accountants to co-op developers and so on and so forth that know how to work with and incubate these projects, then we won't really deepen that work. So that was a chunk of the money that went to those entities, and of which there were like 20, let's say. Another chunk of money went to these early stage projects within those four pillars. People were able to submit a proposal that explained how they were going to develop a worker cooperative. They had already moved beyond kind of the ideation stage, but they needed some support, financial support, to move from pre-development to development. And 25 to 30 grantees each received about $150,000.
Okay.
To take their project from where it was to this next stage. And that's where they are now. And then the last chunk of money, which hasn't actually been allocated yet, is really for some of the larger projects. Once they get to development, now they need some additional support. And soon the city will announce how they can access that. So the Community Wealth Building Ecosystem, CCWBE, is what we were one of the grantees within that first sphere, that first bucket. And our role is to do the research, convening, to support the ecosystem more broadly. So Chicago didn't have kind of an overarching entity that was doing that. So it's not just that we provide co-op development support. We provide support to all of the projects in different ways. And so that's what CCWBE is.
And what's your role in CCWBE?
So I helped start that. I was one working with my colleague, Renee Hatcher. We are, the PI, what they call principal investigator, or the PI on the lead on this project, but we have a team that we work with. So, yeah, we designed it, and so it's not a city CCWBE is not a city entity, but we work very closely with the city, particularly some folks in the mayor's office and Department of Planning, to kind of think through and support the other grantees and and how the resources are allocated for them.
So how much support do you get from city council? You talked about the mayor's office, but the politicians throughout Chicago in this endeavor.
I mean, for this initiative, well, you know, quite honestly, I think very few know about the project, unfortunately. I mean, this was a big announcement under the previous mayor, and it was at the end of the former Mayor Lightfoot's term, and it was embedded in her office and in the Office of Equity and Racial Justice, and it came out of that. And so with the new administration and all the, you know, the shifting in the when you have a new administration, there isn't a lot of both awareness of what we're doing or explicit support. So that is something we're working on, trying to figure out how do we get deeper support. It's not that individual aldermen may support a project that's located in their ward. But I don't think there's sufficient awareness of the ecosystem. Mm. And so that is a big thing that we are trying to change.
Well, I find that the reason for this radio show is to promote and get people to understand what co-ops are about, because most people don't. And unfortunately, I have found that most cooperators spend time telling other cooperators what they're doing. In the worker co-op world, but not outside of it. There's just not as much going on outside. So I'm glad you are tackling that, and anything I can do to help support getting the word out about the benefits of community wealth building, the benefits of worker co-ops and land trust and affordable housing, limited equity housing co-ops, all of these, and the commercial part of it. It's extremely exciting to me, but how do we get that information out to people?
That's exactly it. That's where, I mean, it took the first year, so it's only a 2-year project. And so the first year was building this as part of the infrastructure so that people had a place to go to access resources. And by this, I mean the platform, the website is more than a website. It's also where all the grantees report, where they get information and so forth. And so this is the second year now, and we're really focusing on the narrative change. How are we reaching and teaching? How are we building greater public awareness of the work? And it's a challenge for those doing the work because they're so focused on building a cooperative, trying to get, right, you know, support from financial institutions that aren't aware of. And so forth. So while we are not building a cooperative, we're really trying to support the ecosystem in Chicago. Yeah, we're really trying to determine what does that mean to build a narrative such that people are aware of this? How do we build a platform, not tech platform, but platform such that we can share the importance of this work?
It's extremely exciting work when you talk about community wealth building, looking at a community, perhaps on the south side. I don't know where the south side of Chicago is, but I hear about the south side of Chicago all the time. But what kinds of institutions are there to help to get people to understand what a co-op is and then to help folks to either start one or take an existing business and convert it into a co-op? And the benefits to the workers. And see, when I mentioned wealth building, I had a reason for asking you that, because most of the time we go to money, But I have been finding since I've been doing now about 10 and a half years this radio show once weekly talking to people, that I found that the biggest wealth building is both relationships and interpersonal growth, self-worth, particularly people learn how to speak and learn how to resolve conflict, and they get voice, and in having voice, they get dignity and self-worth. And that, to me, is the biggest form of wealth building in this whole world of cooperation. Money's great, yes, it has its place. But when somebody feels really good about themselves and have dignity and hope, then that changes the family and the community a lot.
So, absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely. I mean, I couldn't say that any better. I think we have to have all, and we are focusing on all of it, right? So how are we creating economic opportunities within these enterprises that are part of community wealth building and land projects and so forth? That create both thriving jobs, right? Jobs where workers can thrive both financially, but also thrive because they have agency. They have the ability to make decisions that impact their work and their life. And in order to do that, it's not just kind of managerial decisions. It is that personal growth. It is learning how to engage with others and, collective decision making. Democracy is difficult, right? We're so used to hierarchy and somebody else determining our, conditions, or we just make decisions in a silo. So learning how to do, engage in conflict isn't always a negative thing, right? Learning how to work through conflicts and tensions, learning how to think about benefits in a broader way such that it's not just an immediate gain, but why we make some sacrifices for something greater that's coming soon. All of those are skills that you have to kind of reteach everyone. I have to learn differently. Mm-hmm. That's not how we're trained. That's not how we're reared. That's not what we learn in schools. So community wealth for us is doing the both end. How do we create jobs that create both living and thriving wage, but also are building these capacities that are transferable from that? Maybe that enterprise doesn't, that somebody leaves that enterprise for whatever reason. What they learn, they take back and embed in their communities, in their homes, right? It is transformative in that way.
Yeah, I've had several people on the show that have talked about how they've learned things in the co-op world and they use it in their family. Budgeting, okay, the solving conflict. Somewhere, Stacy, yeah, the Bible says where two or more people are gathered, God is there also. And I say, yeah, God needs to be there because where there's two or more people, there's going to be conflict. It's automatic. It's going to be conflict, but conflict doesn't have to be bad. If we can learn how to talk to each other, your view may be totally different from mine. But if I can hear you, it may help me to change my view or to make my view even better, and vice versa. By listening to each other, we can have a much better organization with the conflict and working through the conflict.
But conflict is a learning opportunity. So your ideas, you may have different ideas, and the initial response might be this conflict. But through kind of, if we approach that with respect and care and love and appreciation, then we can learn from each other, right? It's not even to change your position. it's like, trying to really understand where you're coming from and how our beliefs can align and make something stronger. Or I can accept that, maybe I was wrong. That's okay. And maybe I do shift. That all of those are possible, but I think we have to approach it with care, approach our relationship building and our work, which is a set of relationships, with care and respect and love.
Care, respect, and love. Okay. So I want to change a little bit here. You're working on a book called Real Black Utopias. And I have it that you're going from this wealth building to community wealth building to where there's communities that were they are creating wealth for that community. They're utopias. So will you just take one community first off and describe that community and what does utopia look like?
Yeah, I mean, thank you, because it looks different in each place. And I call them real black utopias because these are places that have a vision and a set of practices for kind of a solidarity economy, right? And they have enough work that is black-centered and or black-led to do this kind of transformative work. And at the center of all of it, for me, at least for this project, has been economic democracy. So in each of these places, there's evidence of worker-owned cooperatives, black-centered worker-owned cooperatives, and a myriad of other things, but they have to at least have that, right? Mm-hmm. So I guess one that comes to mind, and I'll be visiting again next week, is, say, Boston. The reason that one is so special is they're all special. The reason that came to mind is because the things that exist, right? It's not just that a place has a lot of cooperatives. It's that it has the infrastructure. Infrastructure is everything. And by that, I mean the mechanisms that help start and sustain both the cooperatives, and they bring people into this work. They create space for relationship building, for cultural practice. Right. All of these things kind of happen in a set of organizations. And so in Boston, they have the Center for Economic Democracy, which helps start the Boston Ujima Project, which is a phenomenal project, right, that is the preeminent project that has done participatory grant making and, community driven decisions around which enterprises might get support, right? So they created a democratic community-driven fund, and I think they've raised $5 million in that fund. And it's all locally driven. And I say Boston, but this is specific neighborhoods. This is Roxbury, Dorchester, Mattapan, and a couple of other predominantly black areas, in which they're focusing in those areas and using neighborhood assemblies for that kind of decision making. And so although people can invest that are outside of those neighborhoods, but you don't have voting rights, which makes sense because if they are locally driven, they've started a different cooperatives. They've helped start what I think it's called Cerro, which is a sanitation cooperative. They've helped start a brewery, I believe, which is a worker-owned cooperative. They've helped start a number of black-owned businesses that are kind of collectively driven. Also businesses within the cultural sphere, like a jazz space. They have support within the municipality, within city government, but their resources are very much controlled locally. And so I use that because there's so many elements of what I think is important to have a vibrant ecosystem. They have ongoing education and learning and are constantly reaching to people and bringing them in and raising that public awareness. But again, the Boston Ujima Project and the Center for Economic Democracy and the Solidarity Economy Initiative, those those are particular to that city. I think other cities have their own formations, right? The other thing in Boston is not only did they raise local dollars, they're part of the National Seed Commons Network or Federation, which is a unique and extremely important, I call it a mechanism, a non-extractive finance mechanism that is both national and local. It's a, as I said, it's a federated model so that partners across the country that are part of Seed Commons can make loans to other cooperatives, right? Drawing on the Seed Commons fund, of which I don't know how much is in the fund, maybe 60 million. I'm not exactly sure. But while the local branch of Seed Commons kind of brings the cooperative in, they get vetted and the decisions are made by a kind of a steering committee at kind of a national level of which the local is part. And they not only make a loan, but they provide technical assistance along the way. They provide support for these new or expanding cooperatives, right? It's a wonderful model that exists in many cities, including Boston.
So there's also a community land trust network. I think there are 7 land trusts in that network.
That's right.
Which is exciting. They're doing some very exciting things. But housing in Boston is extremely expensive. I think it's more expensive than D.C., but it is expensive. And so pooling money and getting people working together is awesome. We're going to take a break, and we've talked about community wealth building, and particularly in Chicago, with Dr. Stacy Sutton, and now we've just begun to talk about Black utopias, those cities, those organizations with even within cities that have the infrastructure to create and sustain co-ops. So, Dr. Sutton, when we come back, we were talking about Boston. If you have anything else you want to talk about Boston, we could do that when we come back. But I would like to go to other cities that you've been doing research on and get some sense of when you'll have this book out, because I'd really like to read it, particularly comparing city to city to city to city and their particular wealth-building model. We'll be right back. Please don't touch that dial. Welcome back, everybody. This is Vernon Oakes, and the program is Everything Co-op, and I'm having the absolute pleasure of talking with Dr. Stacy Sutton this morning about community wealth building, and we were just beginning to talk about Black utopias, those cities or those areas in cities where Blacks are creating wealth. They have the infrastructure to start and sustain these different kinds of organizations. So you were talking about Boston, Stacy. Is there anything else you want to say about Boston?
No, I think your point at the end was important that I forgot in terms of the Community Land Trust, right? That it's not in any area that I call real Black utopias, and the real part is important in that it's not just when we talk about utopias, it's just not a fanciful thing. It's not just an idealized vision of what could be. But actually, it's real. It's happening. It's now. So in Boston, or in any real Black utopia, it's not one project, right? When I use the term infrastructure, it means that there's an ecosystem in that place, and each place looks a little different, but each place has some elements that are similar, like the values the commitment to economic democracy, right? But how that looks on the ground in terms of which projects they're prioritizing or which projects have flourished varies, right? And so Boston has many of those elements, right? As I said, the worker cooperatives, the support organizations, the land trusts, access to non-extractive capital for the lending, you know, all of those components were necessary, and others. Housing is also, right? Food, all of those components. So an area that I think is underappreciated, and I'm still learning about it and visiting it, visiting next week. So I haven't actually been, but I have learned a lot by being in conversation with folks there. It's Houston. And Houston is interesting in that they don't have a lot of cooperatives, but they now have a land trust. They have started some critical cooperatives in, I think it's in the third ward. And there's an entity that's supporting that work. We Are the Ones. And they are providing both technical support, emotional support. They're members of Seed Commons, I believe. And they really have a vision for collective ownership. A critical component there is the public awareness. Because when you don't have a critical mass of entities on the ground that people you can point to show how these things work, there's a lot of education that's required. So through We Are the Ones the Sankofa Research Institute, all of those, they're kind of, at least those are the two primary ones that I know of, as well as the Houston Community Land Trust, which is new. And I think it just received money from the McKinsey Scott money. They're starting to flourish, and they've started a childcare cooperative, a construction cooperative, and they are kind of moving forward with others. So Houston doesn't always come up. It doesn't have as large an ecosystem as some places, but I think the vision and kind of the ideology that's motivating their work absolutely makes it what I call a real black utopia. I was in D.C. Baltimore was, I think, the last city I went to, and they too, it's very similar. There's a lot of parallels with Baltimore and Boston in terms of the infrastructure, right? They have the Baltimore Roundtable for Economic Democracy, which has helped spur numerous cooperatives, start and support numerous cooperatives. Technical assistance, financial, non-extractive capital, again, part of the Seed Commons. There's something common. When you start to look at all the places, you realize, there's some things that are essential in each, or are essential, and you see them in each place. So that's how I've come to these 15 cities, essentially. And although they look different, there are elements, right, that are common.
So when I've talked to you before, I've gotten that in an ecosystem, you have what co-ops are already there, what worker co-ops are there, what consumer co-ops are there, housing, food, credit unions, what purchasing co-ops and marketing co-ops are in the community. And you may not have a lot of marketing and purchasing because a lot of times those are related to agriculture. And some of the cities you may not have, you may have some. But then it is all of those technical support kinds of things, legal, financial, that's trying to help somebody get started and work through all of the training that has to happen to make it get started and sustain itself. And I put promotions down there because it's not normally what's in there. And in the ecosystem, you don't find people that's out there promoting the co-ops that they're starting and talking about the benefits of this community wealth building. So that's, in talking to you, I've come with, that's what's in the ecosystem. What co-ops are already there and what organizations are there to help build, to sustain those co-ops and then build other co-ops. And I thank you for that knowledge because I got it from you.
Sure. No, I think that's right. I mean, I think people use the term the term ecosystem broadly or differently. And I use it in kind of the most expansive way, in the sense that there are a set of co-ops that exist or being started, but it can't just be the co-ops, right? All the things that you mentioned. It's also, at least in this work, for me, in Real Black Utopias, there's work that's happening around advocacy and the social movement work, right? And at that intersection of fighting the harmful things and really building the things that are rejuvenating and important. So yes, the technical assistance, the other support organizations, non-extractive finance, that's crucial. It may not only be Seed Commons, right? There are other funds out there now, but that is a critical component, because conventional banks don't typically lend to cooperatives. The public awareness and communication, absolutely. All of that is part of the ecosystem in any place, and every place doesn't have all of that, but having, you know, some of that is, and building on that is crucial.
Okay, we talked about Boston, Houston, Baltimore. How many of these utopias are there, first, that you identify?
I mean, maybe every place, every city may have it. I've been focusing on 15 cities, and I've visited a large number of them and will continue to do so through June. And hopefully I'll get to at least maybe all of them or something very close. So the way that I've identified it, as I mentioned, I really looked at those that had Black-centered economic democracy projects, so worker cooperatives. And my kind of hypothesis, at least, was that if you have that, there must be other things. It's very rare for a cooperative to just emerge in isolation.
Right.
So how did that get started? And that was at least methodologically how I started to kind of understand. Once I could map these cooperatives, I could then say, okay, what's around there? Who's supporting these? How did they start calling them and finding out what is the infrastructure? And as I did that, I really narrowed down to these 15 cities. And that's not to say there are other places, absolutely, that aren't on the list. As one person, I can only do but so much. So I decided to stick with these. But as I learn about these, I'm learning about others that aren't on the list that, you know, maybe the next iteration I can go deeper into. So Richmond and Oakland, they're distinct municipalities, but both, there's what's interesting.
You're talking about Richmond, California, not Richmond.
Yes, I'm sorry. Virginia. Yes, Richmond, California, and Oakland, right? They're quite proximate and yet very distinct, very different histories in some regards. And a lot of movement, you know, from Oakland to Richmond, largely around the gentrification of Oakland. But in both places, you know, we're seeing these support organizations, and again, the non-extractive finance, that are supporting both food co-ops, worker-owned food co-ops, kind of hybrid models, bicycle co-ops, you know, different types of enterprises, but with a really strong emphasis on land and housing, right? With understand, for obvious reasons, the houselessness crisis in that region is quite profound, and the gentrification and the kind of the pushing out of residents, particularly Black and Brown residents, is deeply problematic, but it's also kind of pervasive. It's you know, it's increasing, and so there's a lot of pushback. And they have some strong land trusts in that area. And so, yeah, I focused there, but also Chicago, which I mentioned.
But before you go off, Oakland, the only thing I hear about Oakland is the crime and gentrification and moving people out. I hear a lot about crime, and this is why I really want us to promote all of the good stuff that's happening in Oakland. You don't hear about it. Just don't hear about it. And I'm a little bit surprised to see that Oakland, Richmond is on your list, because I didn't know that much was going on.
Oh, yeah.
Have you found that religious institutions, whether they're churches, mosques, have they been involved in helping to create co-ops?
It's interesting. No, not what I explored. It wasn't religious. That's not to say they're not doing that. But the folks that I met with, they come out of different spaces. They come out of community organizing. There are organizations that, like this organization, Repaired Nations, which kind of at its core, it is kind of a Pan-Africanist organization that is focusing on education, bringing young people in and teaching young people about cooperatives. And they started with a reading group for young people. But they also have travel. I mean, they brought people to Ghana and they're bringing people to Tanzania and really explaining and sharing those models.
What's the name of that group and where are they at?
They're in Oakland. It's called Repaired Nations.
Okay.
I had the pleasure. Greg Jackson, Gregory Jackson, is one of the founders of that. And I had the pleasure of going to Ghana with them in 2019. And now I think they're soon to leave for their trip to Tanzania. And they've been back to Ghana multiple times. They have a reading. They started with a reading group and have now expanded. There's also EB Prep East Bay, Property Real Estate Cooperative, something I may not have the acronym correct, but it's EB Prec, PREC. And they are it's not just a housing cooperative. It's kind of like a community investment vehicle in which they've created a fund. They're purchasing properties of which they may, like, typically multifamily properties, in I think it's West Baltimore, I mean West Oakland, mm-hmm. or maybe no East Oakland, and to mitigate gentrification, and keeping those properties in trust so that people can afford to live there, and so that's happening. I mean, there are a number of projects. The Parable of the Sword, they focus on land and housing as well. So there are a bunch of organizations that are doing amazing work. You can't get dissuaded by the crime narrative because that is not what defines, in my mind, is not what defines Oakland or Chicago, right? Mm-hmm.
So let's talk about Chicago.
We started with Chicago with the community wealth building, and there's a lot happening in Chicago. We had the good fortune of getting those resources, which has helped start new cooperatives. But Chicago has a long history of cooperatives, right? I mean, it's a labor city, and so labor rights have always been major. When people think about worker-owned cooperatives, sometimes they think about the takeover of Republic Windows in 2008, takeover by the workers, the sit-in, and eventually that was converted into a worker-owned cooperative through the workers' kind of resistance and then a union supporting them. They converted Republic Windows into what is now known as New Era Windows, and it still exists. It's still thriving. And so that was actually, you know, again, that started in 2008. It was fully converted by 2012. And what's interesting there is the way that was structured in terms of the financing that helped that move from a conventional business to a worker-owned business was supported through this organization called Working World, which had done this kind of work in Argentina. Working World and Seed Commons are essentially Working World's Seed Commons was spun out of Working World. And so I've been mentioning non-extractive finance for all of these places. And I guess the first example of investing in U.S. was probably the newer cooperative, right? Mm-hmm. That was in 2012 when the finance were complete. But again, Chicago has a long history of cooperatives. I mean, it was in 1930s at a food co-op, the Hyde Park Food Co-op, which lasted 75 years. And from there, since the boom that we're seeing nationally, which is post-financial crisis, so post-2010, that's where we're really seeing a proliferation of these kind of quote-unquote alternative models, non-traditional business models. Yeah, in Chicago, we're seeing a growth of those as well. And they look a cross-section of models. So some are worker cooperatives. We're seeing a number of commercial properties that are kind of being purchased by residents and governed by residents. So we call those community investment vehicles. Chicago's new to the community land trust model, but now I think there are a few land trusts that are emerging. Yeah, and again, this is all on the south and west side of Chicago, which, you know, because of the segregation of the city, that's somewhat coterminous with Black and Latinx in the city. As you said, you don't know the south side, but you know the south side.
Yeah. So I just want to give a quick shout out to Shirley and Charles Sherrod. Charles passed away a couple years ago, but Shirley and Charles went to Israel to learn about land trust, and they brought that to the U.S., and they created the first, it was called Community Land Trust, but they are a Black couple out of Albany, Georgia, and she's still very, very active. She's just a wonderful person. So, we talked about Chicago, Baltimore, Houston. What's another city?
It's one of the smaller cities.
Which one?
I think Dayton, Ohio.
Okay.
So Dayton is interesting in that they, the story, I think the story is fascinating. So they started New Gem City, which is
a food co-op.
A food co-op, right, absolutely. The history of that really comes out of a social movement work in which some organizers, the police killing of a kind of a Black man in the city, and then an organizer committed suicide, and that helped to kind of spur a coalition of organizers coming together. And that was in 2014, I believe. And they took a road trip together to Jackson. This was before Cooperation Jackson existed, but they went there for, I guess it was the 50th anniversary of Freedom Summer. And it was on that trip that they started talking about the importance of creating, they started talking about the food apartheid on the west side, I believe, of Dayton, in which the Black area, there was just no supermarkets and hadn't been for years. Mm-hmm. And what would that look like to start something? And out of that came Gem City. But Gem City is indeed a food cooperative, but it's a community space. It's a learning space. They also have Cooperation Dayton, which is helping to spur other cooperatives and do some of that education, and they're part of Seed Commons, right? So again, it's in each of the city, there's at least one kind of incubating organization or hub organization that is helping to hold and coalesce some of the work. And it's usually one of those entities that also is a partner of Seed Commons so that they can get funds to start some of this work. And people often think it's largely large cities. That's why it's important to share the Daytons and the Buffaloes, that those are not large cities, that those are post-industrial cities that have experienced deindustrialization and disinvestment for decades. And there are also residents that have decided that, they want to control both the land and their labor and are using cooperative models to do that. And there's also cultural work that's happening, right? And so in all of these places, not in each place, but in some of the places, they have cultural projects, as I mentioned, in Boston. I think in Dayton, they're also They've created a space that is a, I haven't visited it yet. I'm going in May. A space that is kind of a, I think it's called like the Love House or something like that, in which they, you know, music and a space for organizers to come and, you know, kind of just chill out and kind of meet each other and build relationships, right? And so that folks don't feel so isolated and fragmented, right? So that, but that's all part of that same, a lot of the same people are doing this work, which I find fascinating.
Truly fascinating, particularly when you put the arts in. And Black History Month was African Americans and the arts with the theme. And they're looking for, we look for co-ops and found co-ops that are in the arts world. And you're just giving me some more. And what I also got was that in the civil rights movement, there was always the arts, that whether it was music, a lot of music, poems, books, just dance, the arts was very much involved with. And you say if you want to have a movement, start with the music.
That's right.
Start with the music. Okay. Give me one more city.
That's a good city. Well, I would say there are two that I am still learning about. I mean, I think the stuff that's happening in St. Paul, Minneapolis and St. Paul, is fascinating. Again, that's the city that's I'm soon to visit, but they have they've been, I think, instrumental, and we've learned a lot from them in Chicago, in that they've had a kind of an education component, right, in terms of how a Black-centered project on cooperative development, and they've had that for multiple years, in which they've had multiple cohorts go through that project or through that initiative, which has helped them start both worker cooperatives or consumer cooperatives and housing cooperatives, right? And that came out of an entity in St. Paul called the Nexus Community Partners, which is also co-hosting the National Black Cooperative Conference in June, I believe. And so, again, another city, and I think it's important that it is St. Paul, that's within kind of a Black community. And what is one other city I would mention? I think people know a lot about Jackson and what's happening in Jackson. I think the last city I would mention is New York City. It's a big city. It's a very big city. And things are happening in the Bronx and in Brooklyn and in Manhattan. And they, in my mind, they're a little separate, right, as each borough is distinct. And there's, so there's more than one hub organization. There's more than one anything. There are multiple things. The city was played a big role in getting funds, especially to technical assistance providers, then helped to spur cooperatives. They also have a big kind of focus on education within the city and different entities, as well as the City University of New York, CUNY, has a program for co-op development. Yeah, I mean, again, each of these cities has its own unique formation, but they have all focused on building infrastructure. One thing we've learned over, for folks that have studied the history of cooperatives, there have always been kind of peaks and troughs, and we usually see those peaks as the economy kind of tumbles, as the economic kind of certainty becomes less and less certain, people start to turn to these alternative models, right?
We're going to have to cut it now.
Oh, okay.
It's been an absolute pleasure talking to you. I'm looking forward to your book coming out and reading about your research. Everybody out there, we'll see you next Thursday. Please live cooperatively.
The preceding program was paid for by Everything Co-op.